Hey, everybody, it's so good to be back together with you again. I know you're probably pooped, but inspired after Easter. And I just want to thank you for sharing reports with us. We heard such great reports about things that God did in Easter, you know, standing room only in churches and amazing baptisms. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to today because the Bible says this in Ecclesiastes 10:10. It says, if the axe is dull and the edge is unsharpened, then much strength is going to be needed, but skill will bring success. And right now, we're all thinking the same things. I mean, if you went into Easter, you're thinking, man, this church did this, this church did that. I wish I had teams that we could do this. But you realize you can't get much done without teams. And then, of course, the state of our nurseries got stressed this weekend. The state of our children's ministries got stressed. And so we're all waking up post-Easter with an understanding of how important building teams is. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that. But again, I want to thank you for sharing your stories with us because, you know, the Bible says this in Proverbs 27:17, that as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. And, you know, a real friend rejoices with you when things go well for you. And really the best friends even can rejoice with you when things aren't going as well for them. That's when you know you have a real friend. So I've got two great friends on the broadcast today that are really going to bless your heart. One of them is my son, and he's my friend. How about that? And my son, Michael, has been on staff for 15 years. He started as our high school worship pastor, and over the years grew to where now he's our creative pastor. The other friend I have is Amy Duffley. And the church actually started in her parents' house when she was a teenager. And then she was a single girl and then a mom with four kids. And then I lured her out of that and she became our creative producer, worked with us for 20 years, ended as a creative director. And I think one of the greatest testimonies to her team building skills is the people she mentored are now carrying on the things that she started. So I'm really looking forward to them sharing with you guys today. Hey, you guys want to say hey to everybody?
Hey, yes. I'm so honored and blessed to get to be with two of my dear friends that I love and respect so much, Pastor Jim and Pastor Mike. And also just such a joy to get to be with so many others that are excited about doing kingdom business. So it's going to be a fun talk today.
Amen. Mike, you want to say anything? Then how about you do the new member shout outs and the partner shout out, and then we'll jump on into it. Does it sound good?
Sounds good. Yeah. It's like Amy was saying, it's just awesome to be on here with you guys. Looking forward to just sharing and hearing wisdom from you guys as well. You know, what we're talking about today, we know is so important because, you know, our success is so dependent on teams and each other. Right. And so we're going to talk about how we can help people succeed in doing so, help our churches or organizations succeed, and ultimately bring ministry to people the best way we can, like we want to. Jesus wants to see us do it. So I'm looking forward to doing that. Let me do let's do our new members first. All right. Every time we do these webinars, we love to shout out our new members. So I'm going to go ahead and do those right now. They're going to put them on the screen, and we are so glad to have the people who are coming on with us. So we have Ken Smith from Greater Love Christian Church in Dayton, Ohio. We have Greg Washington from United Fellowship Ministries in Peoria, Illinois. We have Stephen Martino from Movement Covenant Church in New York, New York. We have Kyle Burchett from New Beginnings Assembly of God in Grayson, Kentucky. We have Randall Black from Living Grace Ministries in Waynesboro, Virginia. We have Franklin Centers from New Richmond Baptist Church, Holland, Michigan, Joseph Shabbat, I think.
Let's say it like you're confident. Nobody will know if you're wrong or right.
Yeah.
You got to watch the mama, right?
That's what she does. I'm Jewish, but I'm not sure if it's Shabbat or Shabbat. But
Shabbat Shalom.
Litchfield Hills Church, Bethlehem, Connecticut. Sorry, Joseph Cull and I from Strongville Christian Church in Strongville, Ohio. Jerry Cesar from Gulf Community Church in Petersburg, Florida. Daimi Pimentel from Resurrection Church in Katy, Texas. Marcus Millett from Providence Church in Montevallo, Alabama. Theofi Ghazi from Bread of Life Church in Chittir, Bangladesh. Wendy Campbell from Top of the Mountain Church Christian Ministries in Blythewood, South Carolina. Ariel Antello from Nazareno Church in Havana, Cuba. and Alan, oh, wow, sorry about that, Alan Adams, and Yahweh's Holy Temple Ministries International in Cape Town, South Africa. Welcome, everybody. It's so such an honor to have you guys along for the ride here with the Significant Church Network. Welcome to the family, and we look forward to the opportunity just to celebrate what you're doing and also to help and serve you guys any way that we can. So welcome. We're so honored and blessed to have you as part of the Significant Church Network. And before we continue on, Dad, if it's okay, I'm going to do a partner shout out to one of our amazing partners that help support and invest and just help accomplish the vision of this network. So that is Pastors and Dr. Scott and Terry Porter. They have an amazing church. You may want to speak into this a little bit, but Abiding Word Church in Sterling, Illinois. Pastor Scott, he's just so much fun to be around. He's such a fun guy.
I was actually going to steal it from you because I like him so much. And I looked on Facebook, and Sterling was the picture we had up on Significant Church. Their church, such a beautiful church out in the cornfield. And they had two standing room only services during Easter. They had 31 people they baptized. Unbelievable in that small place in Sterling. And I'll tell you, I think they are just awesome. So just Pastor Scott, Terry, you guys are watching. Man, we're so proud of you. Thank you for all you do. And thank you for loving pastors like you do too, because that's really what it's all about, the 100 local connectors to understand that we want to be a network of pastors, by pastors, for pastors. We want to keep them refreshed. We want to keep them strong. You guys are the ones that are making the difference. So thank you so much. Well, hey, let's get started. Does that sound like a plan? And I just want to say this, that our goal is really to help everybody run farther and faster and have more fun doing it than you ever done it in your life. And farther and faster is going to happen because you have the right principles coming to you. You have, you know, you're learning the right things. Having fun is going to happen because you got the right people in your life. And we want to help you with all of those things. Today, we're going to talk about building highly effective teams. And again, it's something we're all thinking about during Easter because we saw cool things other people did that we wish we could do. And sometimes it's not money that we need, it's just teams that we need. So how do you find the right people? How do you build the right kind of teams? And I got to say this, Amy was part of this whenever we tried to get started. And Amy, do you remember the July 4th thing? I got so moved by, you know, God giving us the life-giving commandments he did, and you built me a mountain, and we put somebody up on it, and the Baptist church let us use their fog machine for free because they used to use it as Easter, but it was July 4th. And I came out with my introduction, however good or bad it was. And when the guy was supposed to be Moses, he's up there choking on the smoke. It's crazy. So how do you get from there, right? We'd have a lot of tenacity back in the day. And you took it from there to where we had 8,000 people, which is a tenth of the people in our audience, and I was weeping at the excellence that it was produced with, and feeling like I was the most fortunate of pastors to have my 10 minutes to present the gospel to people I would never had a chance to present it to. But man, the route between a guy choking on the fog machine and that event was not easy. It was a lot of meetings, a lot of times in the office. Lots of tears, lots of frustration. So I'm going to try to boil that down to four things that I think will help people. And you guys have so much wisdom. But number one, leadership matters, right? That's the first thing I'd say to people, is who you choose is going to mean everything, because they have to be the person that can build the team. You're not going to have time to do as the pastor. So really think about who the leader's going to be.
Mm-hmm. That's right. You weren't the only one crying at those, because I would be, after that big production, I'd be in the back with all the cast and crew. And I just remember having tears in my eyes thinking, I felt like I didn't really do anything. Everyone else played such great vital parts, and having a team that was so cohesive with a vision, the same vision, and everyone working together and interdependent with one another. And just the joy of seeing what God can do through those type of efforts, it feels like I felt like, what did I do? Y'all did it all. And I would just be weeping at the end in gratitude to everybody in their hearts and their what they poured themselves into. So I remember those times well. And who you have on the team 100% matters.
Right.
Yeah. Well, over the years, I've given more time to my creative department, because if you don't win the weekend, not much else matters, right? I mean, honestly, if you don't really win hearts over the weekend, you're not going to have a lot of people to build into teams. So you guys have probably had the most scrutiny, the most of my time, the most intensity of it. And one of the things we learned is, just like in a musical drama, you got to position your performers, right? You got to have the right people there. And that's where leaders come in, because it really does all start with looking around the table and saying, I'm trying to do more. Can I do it with the people around the table?
Absolutely, Michael.
Yeah. I think it's good that we're starting here, because I think both sides of this are so important, right? The people that you have on the bus, the people you're working through, and then also the coaching that you bring on the backside of it, or the leadership you bring on the backside of it. But sometimes we can kind of convince ourselves that maybe it's one way or the other. And I mean, I even think of some examples off the top of my head. Like I look at, sorry to go sports, I look at the New England Patriots the last few years, right? As good as Coach Belichick has been all these years, but you know, who he has in that locker room is making a difference, right? Tom Brady's not there anymore, and he's trying to figure that out. Same thing with Greg Popovich. And they're obviously incredible coaches, but you can have great systems, you can have all these great things, but if you don't first have the right people on board, you're not, we've experienced that in different ministries here in church. So I think it was Albert Einstein who said, I heard this somewhere, that if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it's going to spend its whole life believing that it's stupid. So it's not that certain people are better than other people, but certain people have certain strengths. And so our job as leaders, I think at the start, is to identify those and put people in position to be successful. And then once we do that, the rest of this is going to have so much more impact, because people are playing from their strengths in a lot of ways.
That's so good, Mike. And I say all the time that I like this to be like lunch appointments, or bring your lunch, and I'm going to bring people to you you'd really love having lunch with, because they're going to sharpen you during this 45, 50 minutes. And so I try to be really well organized so you have some takeaways. And the first thing I'd say about building highly effective teams is you're only going to be as good as your leaders, you know? And Michael said it, that really you're only as good as your players too. So you probably need to think about the whole team, not just your leader, but the leader's going to find all the people for the team. All those people, Amy, right? Just, I didn't find them. I found her. And then she found all of those people. And so here are my quick takeaways, and I'll let Amy, you speak to this first point again, but leadership matters. So position your performers. Remember, function and feel both have to be good to keep people together. So make sure the person you choose is good at both function, and make sure that they're good at feel as well. And then I would say this, that you're going to have originators, you're going to have organizers, and you're going to have operators. And find out who your originators are, and don't expect them to be your organizers all the time. Sometimes your best originators hate organization. But you have to have people who can originate and keep you really good, and they love keeping you at the cutting edge. Got to have some organizers who hold it all together. And then your operators are the people who just want to show up and do a job. But if your leader doesn't take both function and feel seriously, what's going to happen is the operators, you're going to see operators quitting like crazy. And they're either going to quit because they don't want to do their function for this team, or they don't like the feel of this team. But if you get that together, it's really helpful. Amy, any thoughts?
Well, you know, talent is so important, and capability is important. But, you know, when I look back over all the years, I just think about, it's capability, integrity, and wisdom. If then that's what you don't see necessarily. You don't necessarily see the integrity or the wisdom. You might see the talent, and then you start putting people in place, and then you find out there's not really that integrity there of the state of being whole or undivided. In other words, if there's junk inside somebody's heart, including us as a leader, it's going to play out in our teams, right? and wisdom loves instruction. So you have, you know, if you have resistors, not responders. So there's so much to building a team that goes deeper than just the talent of the people.
Right.
That is so true. It is. So I just, we'll get to this in the end, but how do leaders get as close as the three of us are? You know, how does that happen? Get to that under our fourth point. Mike, I'm sorry. Did you want to say something?
No. I was just agreeing. It's very true, because you can have the most talented people, but if your leaders aren't on board, which what we're going to talk about in a minute, right, on our next point, but if they're not on board with the vision, what you're trying to accomplish, Dad, you've often said, sowing to the good of the whole, you know, those kinds of things, and we're going to have trouble accomplishing what the team needs through them if talent
alone. We get people not sowing to the common good, we're never going to be a championship team. Right. But I just want to say this, it's so easy to sound good on a webinar. It's really hard to do.
Definitely, yeah.
And you guys, we get to throw all the battles together, forming teams. And again, we're coming off a high because we had a super high attendance weekend and a lot of salvations. But that, it was a lot of work, and it is. And for anybody, every level's work. I'm not what I want to be. There's more work to do, but I'm glad we made progress anyway. Well, here's the second thing I want to talk about, and that is leaders matter. You got to position your performers. The second thing that matters is keeping the why and the what right. The why and the what matters. And that's why it's so important that you have meetings where problems are solved. You have meetings where function is improved. You have meetings where opportunities are taken advantage of. Because again, remember, if function and feel both matter and you have no meetings to solve things that have happened, you don't solve any problems, then eventually people are going to start disconnecting either over function or they're going to start disconnecting over feel. The other thing is your originators, they love talking about the opportunities. What can we do next? I mean, I think about Amy. Before I knew it, I had a karate association on my stage. I had the best dancers in town on my stage because she's an originator. And she would begin to think about, okay, what opportunities? Now that we did this good, what can we do from here? So having times where you recognize that for your team, the why matters to them, the what matters to them, that's really important if you're going to have a highly effective team. Mm-hmm.
It absolutely is. And we have to keep, as leaders, we have to keep bringing that why back up to remind them of the why, keep the why really in front. But, you know, going back to like what you said, Michael, earlier, that Pastor always talks about basically the common, sowing to the common good. That's another why of that has to be told. Why is that important for your team, for them to realize? Because once they're not sowing to the common good, you know, things start falling apart and it starts disintegrating.
Right.
Because one of the things is like the why. One thing I think that can be such a little trap is that in the Christian world and all of us that are doing kingdom business, our why is we're doing this for God and no one's going to disagree with that why. And so it's like, okay, we all are in unity because we all are doing this for the Lord. That's not harmony with one another. And there's both have to happen.
Oh, that's
so
good.
It's not okay to think, oh, we're all in unity because we all agree on the big why. There's another why.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that what's good about the what and the why, the what gives people direction and the why helps give them inspiration. And I think you need both of those things, right? So if you find people don't seem motivated, they don't seem inspired, maybe ask yourself, is the why clear enough? You know, are they understanding the why? And if they do and they're just not getting on board, then that's a bigger conversation. But if the why is clear, inspiration should be a lot stronger. And if the what's clear, then direction's there. But I mean, it's kind of like, you know, going to the gym, you might know what to do, but do you have enough inspiration? Do you know why you're wanting to do it? And so I think it's similar in our what's and our why's, and it helps us focus our energies and our resources, right? So that we're not spending a lot of sideways energy, but we're really headed towards the why. This is what we're trying to accomplish. And so it gives us that filter in decisions.
And how
we're gonna talk a little bit about,
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. Say that again, because
I was just saying how we do the what, because if there's not a good how, if there's not good processes and playbooks, and how it does frustrate people because they're excited about our why and they're excited about our what, and we're going to all go for this. And there's not a good roadmap to get there. And you'll lose volunteers super fast that way. And staff, maybe not as quickly, but they'll certainly get frustrated. We've seen that, right, Pastor, in years past.
And honestly, sometimes as a pastor, you're driving down the road after Easter and you're thinking, I want to do all these things. But how in the world? I mean, at the same time, I mean, we had a funeral of a long-term member Monday, right after, you know, one of our best members went to heaven on Tuesday. And so we're doing the funeral right after Easter. And so you're thinking, man, I'd like to do all this stuff, but I'm just trying to tread water, man. I'm just trying to keep my head above the water. And, you know, we'll talk about this later, but how you schedule your meetings and the balance of your life really plays into all this. And having a good perspective of, okay, Jesus said, I'll build my church. So I can't build the church. I've said this a lot, but I don't build Faith Family Church. I work hard to be a good communicator. I work hard to be a good leader. I work hard to give good care to people that are the closest to me, like Jesus did to 12. But I don't build the church. The Holy Spirit's work in my heart is ultimately what builds the church. Now, if I don't grow and develop, can I hinder what he's trying to do? Yes. And then he might have to replace me as pastor to do what he wants to get done. But I don't build the church. And I don't build the church on the other end either. I can't do what God does. I can't do what the people do. And I think once you settle that as a pastor, now you're starting to say, okay, I get it. You know, I can't let the urgent get in the way of what I'm called to do. So I'm going to start working on my leadership structure, and I'm going to get some people around me that the why matters to their heart like it does mine, and the what matters. And of course, Amy, you were raised at a home where your dad was a dentist, so he made decent money every day, went to work. But he at times, when the church got busy, he'd cut back to 3 or 4 days, you know, because he was saying, you know what God's doing is so important. And Pastor, I want to help you with this. So people like that are just amazing people to have in your life. Mike, I don't know if you remember this, but you guys went to the state Final Four, just about won it when you were a senior. And when you were a junior, we had started assembling the team, you know, the team started to be assembled. But then the coach ran into some, you know, teenage issues. Some of them were on drugs, and the team kind of broke up. I mean, you were in the playoffs. And so I offered to just buy a meal and do a little thing with your team where I ask all the team to say, tell me why you want this team to be great. And it was shocking what the different whys were around the table, right? Do you remember that night?
I do. I remember having Chinese food in your office. I don't remember the why, all the whys, but I definitely remember that time.
Yeah, I can tell you that Jake's why was he wanted to stand up for God. You had a bunch of Christians on your team, not all of them, but some of them. And then your why was, I think you wanted to please your dad. I don't know what it was.
I just wanted to win. That's,
you, that's what you said. You said, I want to win. And then GG's was he wanted to have a good time. You know, you're 6'5" center. Have a good time. But it was the coach's ability to get you to stay. It had a lot to do with his management of the whys around the table.
Right.
And, he wasn't seeing that at the time. And I felt like that dinner was going to help him. And to his credit, he saw it and he made an adjustment. You guys became an incredible team. But why and what matters? Let's go to number three, because this is important. Aiming actions at objectives really does matter. You know, before Amy left, she transitioned from being creative director to community life director. And before she waved at me and said, okay, I gave a lot of good years. It's time for me to move to the next stage of my life. Mm-hmm. But at the end of that, we looked at each other and we said, with as many people giving their life to Christ, we should be able to baptize 500 people in a year. So the most we'd ever baptized was about 200 and some, right? But low 200s, and we said, we're going to go for 500. And the moment we made that decision and started aiming at objectives differently, I think we hit 490-something, Amy, right as you were going off staff. You know, we just about hit 500. And it's really important that once you get the right people around the table and the why and the what are in place, and you can't do it without it. You can't get in a hurry, but then aiming everybody's actions at the objectives are so important.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember, you know, when you were saying each person's individual why, that is so good, Pastor Jim, because somebody might have a personal why that really is a self-centered why, or just not really the right why. And so they're not taking those steps like, you know, in like we need to as a team, because they've kind of got their own why, or they've got their own bar that's not like the leader's bar. And I just want to throw this out, and Pastor, you didn't pay me to say this, but I'll just say this because all those that are listening, but truly the best leaders, I'm going to start tearing up, sorry, but Pastor Jim is truly so humble. His why has never been about building his own reputation. It's never been about being the biggest and the best, because he's had, even I know personally, other opportunities that might have seemed more glamorous. His motive has truly been pure. So the integrity of his why is undivided. And that makes him so trusted. And so I just want to say that, just from all the leaders' standpoints, if your team can sense that your personal why isn't the purest of integrity, they'll lose trust in you as a leader. And that's why truly I would say, Pastor, your team follows you, because it's very obvious that you truly have integrity in your why. There's not ulterior whys in your why. And that's just good for us all to know as leaders, and to look for that in our people as well, because we want to grow leaders. A leader wants to grow leaders, not just bring followers. A true leader builds leaders, not followers.
Right.
And so we want to get people to reflect what we are and mirror. We want to try to be what we want to see in them, right? So anyway, I think it's important to really assess the why, like you were talking about in y'all's Chinese food dinner.
A true leader builds leaders.
Pass it on to my dad, because I just saw my dad do that. And at his funeral, the people that came up to me and said, "Hey, I just want to tell you a story about your dad." I thought, how in the world did he have time to influence people's lives like that? But I've got a whole lot of pastors that are watching today that they're just like that. To me, it's a beauty of significant church that we have people who get it, that pastors are too isolated. Pastors, honestly, we get too much credit and too much blame, and we need to help each other enjoy this. We need to help each other build teams so that we all have this camaraderie and this feeling and accomplishment that our hearts look for.
Mm-hmm. I like that quote, Amy, that good leaders build leaders, not followers. I think if you're listening to this and you're thinking, when we say leadership matters, you're thinking about yourself, I think you're only getting half the picture. I think you should be thinking about the people that you're bringing up as leaders. Because like you were saying earlier, Dad, we have limits, right? So if it's all built around us, we're limited. And I think most of the people watching this webinar have gotten to the point where they realize that, but it's a good reminder. But this point you're talking about, aiming actions at objectives, this takes work, right? This is where some of the real work can be done. But I think what can happen in organizations and church life, for sure, because we're busy, you know, they say organizations do exactly what they're organized to do, right? And sometimes we can work the system, work the process, and keep working it, but we keep getting the same results. But if we want to see different results, then I think it is, you know, really good, even if we're doing well, to take time. We do it every summer, to stop and really evaluate what we're doing, to stop and say, this is what I would encourage people to do, at least, is take everything that you're doing and filter it through the funnel of your what and your why. So if our what is to, whatever your mission statement or your vision is, are these things contributing to those? Because I know for me, every year, I'm surprised that some of the things I find maybe aren't really adding to that. And so, so sometimes we can just get in that funnel of execution. And if we don't stop before we know it, we're doing things that aren't really benefiting us like they could be, because we don't take the time to stop and really do the hard work of aiming actions at objectives.
Right. And they should change you know, we shouldn't be doing the same thing every single year, because that's the way we've always done it. It shifts. The culture shifts, people shifts, style shifts, the market shifts.
Personnel can shift. Yeah.
Yes. And so you're always having to relook at, okay, are we doing things that are really significant? Speaking of significance, is the time we're spending significant and really hitting the new goal? If there's a shift in what's more important now, we have to change things. And we have to change mindsets. And John Maxwell said people change for four. There's four different reasons that people change: when they learn enough, they want to; when they receive enough, they're able to; when they see enough, they're inspired to; or when they heard enough, they have to. And you don't want to have to get to that place as a church organization.
Right.
You know, you guys.
Go ahead.
Sorry. No, well, I was just going to say, it doesn't shock me that you guys kind of went this direction, because you're creative pastors. And so you guys are people that almost can't stand when things stay transactional, right? It's like the same old, same old. So I'm going to let you talk, Mike, but I just want to say this to people. And this isn't going to shock you guys. I'm going to reiterate my points, because I did that every meeting we were in. Leadership matters. Our why and our what matters. Right. And aiming actions and objectives matter. And people have said it this way too, that you have roles and you have goals. So however you want to play that, like I have a role as a pastor, I have a role as a husband, I've got a role as a father, I've got a role as a brother, I got a role as a friend. And Martin Luther said it, an idle mind's the devil's workshop. When I stayed busy at my roles, man, life just got so fun. And I really realized that when I feel like I can't stand doing this and I got to do it to please somebody, when I start feeling it, I started realizing that's not the will of God. That feeling that I shouldn't be doing this is actually something I need to pay more attention to. And I need to play the roles God called me to play. I need to have goals for each one, which I love. You know, when I had hepatitis C, my three sisters had cream-filled donuts from my favorite bakery delivered to me when I got the news. And I love being in their life. I don't want to be working for God to where I don't have any fun in my life, you know? And so for guys to get their roles clear and get a team of people who has their roles clear, instead of just being, feeling responsible for every little thing that comes up, getting roles clear and goals clear. And then you have your work plan, and your work plan is, this is the part I'm going to do. And to me, the excitement happens. We're going to get to the fourth point here in a minute, but the excitement happens when you have high quality people and you have a why where you do trust each other. I remember serving on a team where we had a shot at the state championship, but we all worked our butts off all off season, but somebody took a selfish shot. He wanted his girlfriend to be impressed with him. Mm. And it wasn't fun in the locker room afterwards, you know, because his why was wrong. And so you get people who you love who's around the table, and you got your whys and your whats down, and you're aimed at these objectives. And that's when most of the time you're going to high five people. I tell people all the time, most people are way more talented than they think, but they're way less focused than they need to be. Mm. And I love to tell the story of that banker who retired out in the country, and he decided he wanted to be respected in the community. So he bought a farm, bunch of farmers, and he realized they all loved shooting guns. If you could shoot guns, you'd be respected. So he painted a big target on the side of his barn, and then he shot, and the bullet went right through the bullseye. And so people started trying to recruit him to their team for the county fair. And finally, one guy got close and said, "Why won't you shoot on my team?" And he said, "Well, it's because I shot into the barn first and then I painted the target around it. I'm not that good of a shot," right? That's how so many people live, is their objectives are so unclear. But when you get an objective clear and you get the right people around the table, you'll be amazed. You can see hundreds of people come to Christ. You can see communities built that get people through hard times. So I just want to encourage every pastor after Easter, we all see people we don't see a lot on Easter, right? And they're opportunities. They're opportunities to help people learn to walk with God, to help people find life through discipleship, Bible reading, prayer. There are opportunities to help people build great friendships that can change their life. And if we get the right people around the table and get the right targets, we can start seeing more of what's in our heart come to pass.
It's good. You said the word focus. I think focus is that word for this number three, because I think that one of the jobs of leaders is to help make sure that the efforts of the team is focused. That sometimes it's not about working harder. You know, we've heard it says about working smarter. It's about making sure everything that we do is contributing to what we're trying to accomplish. Sorry, we've used a lot of sports analogies, but I remember going from high school to college. And in high school, what's that?
Amy, you said, can we get a different analogy?
The difference in the results of working out in a high school program, right? Where it's just you go do your workouts, you work hard, you know. Then you go to a college program. Not only is it hard, but it's focused. There's an eating plan. There's a, you know, specific workout plan that you're following. You start seeing results. And I think in some ways, sorry for the analogy, but in some ways it's very similar with this kind of stuff. If we sit down and we say, okay, we know we have the right people on the bus. We know why and what we're trying to accomplish. Now let's look at what we're doing and make sure we're not doing a whole bunch of things that aren't really helping us get there. And man, it's crazy when you, another thing about focus is just as much not knowing what not to focus on as it is knowing what to focus on. So sometimes you do have to say no to things in order to really focus. And that can be hard in ministry because we want to say yes to everything. But we can accomplish more when we know what to say no to as well. At least that's what I found. Yeah.
You know, go ahead.
No,
I was just going to say Matthew Emmons. I'm going to go ahead and use an example that's a shooting one. Matthew Emmons was a former four-time Olympian. He was in the Olympics in 2004, and he was shooting. He was a gold medalist, just an amazing shot. And he was in his match, or I forget what it's all called, but he's aiming. And he aims at the target. He hits a bullseye. He's right there at getting the gold. But what he did is he shot at the wrong target. So it's like, and he lost everything. Because even though he was excellent, he was the best in his field, he hit his target and he nailed it. But it just wasn't the one that won. And so it's really important for us to know that, yeah, maybe we're doing a great job in what we were doing, but it's not what God's wanting us to do, or it's not what the leader is asking us to do, or it's not what we should be doing. So anyway,
yeah, that's good.
So see, I got
it. Awesome. Amy just used a sports analogy.
I had to do it.
That was for Cully right there. That was for Cully.
Getting
an out.
Well, hey, let's move towards the end here. Okay. And again, we're trying to talk about four things you can focus on. If I do these four things, I'm going to have better teams in my church. Better leaders, you're going to have a better team. Why and the what strong, you're going to have better teams. If you have people aimed at objectives that matter, you're going to have better teams in your church. And then here's the final one that we'll talk about. And that is that you have to continually re-engineer. And you guys have both been blessings to the organization this way. Of course, Amy, you were in our foundational days because you would come in. Sometimes you'd be frustrated, if we're honest, because some of the staff were saying, that's good enough. And they just wanted, they'd even show things on paper maybe that didn't really reflect what was going on. And having a process where you continually re-engineer things and where everybody develops a best never rest attitude instead of it's good enough attitude. That's a big part. If you're going to have effective teams, you got to have that continual evaluation. And then you have to be like an orchestra conductor, you know, telling people, okay, Michael, you know this. You build a great worship band, but you got to talk to your lead guitar player. You got to talk to your bass player. You got to talk to your keyboard players. And now we're not going to do it like this because it's going to sound better. Do it this way, you know, and leadership's a lot like that. I just want to say it's been great. I always have my eye on the feed. And one guy said, hey, I'm a new local connector. And this is the kind of information I'm so glad that you guys are putting out and pastors are getting help by. So just know we want to help you. Just email us. put something on the feed, because the goal is to for me to find best of practice people who can help people reach the dreams that are in their heart. That's what this is all about. So anyway, yeah. But re-engineering, you guys want to take a minute and talk about that?
Yeah. And can I say to Phil on the chat as well, it has been awesome to see the chat. You can see all these replays on our website or on our YouTube page. He was asking about the, where can we watch the replays? All these that we do are always up on our YouTube page or our website. And Pastor Joe, awesome. We're so glad to have you. Appreciate you as the local connector. Sorry about that, Ed. Okay. So continual re-engineering. Amy, do you want to go first?
Well, I'm just thinking about a pastor that y'all all would know. And he said that if he had to tell himself, if I was to fire myself and walk out of my office and then come back in and look at it all from fresh eyes, what would I really say I need to do different? And I when I heard that, I thought, that's really good. I need to evaluate my responsibilities, my department, as if I'm a new person coming in and looking at it, you know, and not try to defend different things or say, well, this is how we always, but be willing to look at it and say, okay, this is what I need to do different. This is what, these are the mistakes I'm making, or this is what the team shouldn't, you know, and just looking at it with the eyes that we have, because it's a, like, you're an intelligent person, you know how to be a good leader, but sometimes you can get, if it's your own team, your own department, your own church, your own, you can almost get like you want to just believe you're doing everything just great. And you have to be willing to fire yourself, go back in as if you're the new guy hired in, and then fix it, you know, re-engineer it.
Right. Right. And I think this is where having the right people around you is so important too, right? Because, you know, I know I've had people that I trust say things to me and I would think, oh, I wouldn't have thought of that. Doesn't mean I necessarily just take everything blindly or do exactly what people say, but it helps me think a little bit different, think, oh, maybe I need to think more about that. So I think having the right people. And then I think another thing I've watched you do, Dad, is you have rhythms to evaluate things. So you have certain things that you see at certain times of year. And like, you just do a good job of having regular inspection. So you're not just putting out fires all the time, but you're being intentional and evaluating. And so you're making changes in rhythm and you're making, you know, you're not missing things. I think you've told us before, I like the quote, you can expect what you inspect, not just what you expect. And so having a rhythm of inspection, rhythm of evaluation, whether that be weekly, whether that be, you know, monthly, maybe you're inspecting certain departments, certain months. You know, I think that's really important too.
Yeah. You know, for me, I tried to learn from people, you know, Peter Daniels helped me a lot. I remember when he called, said, hey, I want to speak in your church. He was a drunkard who became one of Australia's richest citizens. He said, I want to speak in your church. And he said, I don't want an honorarium. I've been married to my wife for bazillion years. And he said, I want to inspire your business people. If I pay my hotel, pay my flight, and you don't give me an honorarium, would you be open to that? I said, sure. He sold enough product. He did just fine, I guarantee you. But anyway, I just picking his brain. And he said, if you want to succeed at business, he said, you got to look at normal people. He said, go to the mall and look at normal people and ask yourself, can I get it done through these normal people? And that saying always stuck with me, because it's interesting. I read something recently about blamers. And you know, people who blame people the most are also the people that develop people the least. So you would think that blamers were good developers, but in the survey, it said it's just the opposite, because the reason people blame is to get responsibility off of themselves. Mm-hmm. And blamers are poor leaders. But when you take that approach, I'm going to get it done through these people, then you turn into a developer and you say, hey, Jesus changed the world through a bunch of ordinary people, didn't he? Because of the leadership that he brought. And you guys are going to enjoy this. But the reason continual reengineering matters is for a lot of reasons. Like, I can walk the facility a few times a year. I wish I could walk it weekly, and I need somebody to walk it more regular than that. But I'm going to see a lot if I walk it, you know, once a quarter, right? And just, and nobody knows when I'm going to walk it, what night I'm going to be walking it, you know. But you have to have weekly, monthly, quarterly, and yearly meetings and have them in your schedule before the year starts. That helps you try to stay on top of all the different things. And you guys will appreciate this. If you don't have weekly meetings with your key players, what's going to happen is you may think you chose the right person to lead, or you may think people's why and what are aligned, and you may think that people are really working their work plan, but it's not until you get in those weekly meetings you find out who people really are. Mm-hmm. And you find out some people are way more awesome than you ever thought they were, and you can't believe the problems they're solving in the meetings. And then you find maybe somebody else is a better thinker than they are a doer. So they would bring up ideas, but when you have your regular meeting, you realize they're pretty evaluative, but they're not very good at execution, you know?
Right,
and
right.
It's that whole process that causes you to keep these four things getting better throughout the whole time. So I love meetings. I always identified with one person I heard. He's one of our presidents in the United States, but he said the hardest part about being president was ending one meeting to go to the next, because he loved the people he was with so much. And I've always felt that way I love my afternoons, because I get to hang out with people that I love and respect the most, you know, and we get to grow better together. So,
mm-hmm. You know, I think something you said there that's good is you might do it once a quarter, but you would expect the leaders closer to the situation to do it more often than that, right? And I think that's another thing with evaluation is we need to make sure it gets down to our leaders too, because it should filter by the time it gets to us. We can't evaluate everything, but we should at least make sure it's being evaluated and we're able to evaluate it quickly. And then another thing I would say is, if you're wondering what should I evaluate, I would encourage you to ask yourself, well, first, what are the mission critical things that I need to make sure are being accomplished? And that's why you did that with your creative team, because you knew how important the weekends were and the services were. And that's something that you knew you needed to evaluate regularly, because it had a lot of payoff and a lot of bang for your buck with your time there. So that's where I would start, is what are those things that are mission critical, and begin to work your way down that list as deeply as you can get. I think that's a good place to start, because we don't have time to evaluate everything, obviously. But if we use our leaders well, they can help with that. And then for us, it's about prioritizing from mission critical being the highest priority stuff.
Mm-hmm. That word responsibility is a big deal, because I always felt like every leader, and I did this with myself too. It's like you look at the mission critical things and you ask yourself, is there anything I could have done better as a leader that would have made this different? First, you look at yourself. And then after you've done that analysis, then you look at the team and you hold them responsible, and they need to feel responsible. They need to understand where they're responsible and own it, and be willing to change and make those adjustments.
Yeah. And that's another good reason for re-engineering is in those meetings, if somebody's not transparent, you pick it up. If somebody's taking credit for what somebody else really did or somebody else's idea, you start picking that stuff up. And that doesn't mean people are bad. It just means they're human. And I've said this many times before, that because when I first started in ministry, it was just all about worship in the word, right? So you definitely took time for prayer and ministry of the word. And then we started building churches that were more attractional and they had more ministries. And so, you know, you started working on that. But for the pastor, there's this dynamic between how good services are and how good my teams are. And I just find that the best flow is start with prayer, because if you are committed to prayer, you'll never wonder who's building the church. You'll never, my pastor told me years ago, if you're humble, you'll never have trouble being humble. If you'll humble yourself, you'll never have trouble being humble. And if you pray, you'll never wonder who's behind the success of your church, because God will do what he does. Then after that, prepare to teach. I mean, take pain with those things, like Paul told Timothy, because your word should be saving yourself and all of your hearers. And people tend to come back when you're saving their life every week, you know? So just don't get too busy to give your best energy to getting yourself ready for the weekend. But then after that, your weekend should really be a blast. And I think if there was something I wish I made an adjustment earlier as a pastor than I did, is when the apostles gave those seven guys their responsibilities around the table. If you study the seven people in Acts chapter 6, they became bishops of regions, many of them later in their life. And so people who are overseeing your ministries today become leaders changing the world tomorrow. And you want to make sure you're investing in your most valuable asset, which are your leaders who have the why and the what down, and they are aimed at objectives just like you, and they're part of this re-engineering process. And honestly, your eternal significance down the road is probably more dependent on what you do in those meetings than what you do in your own individual performance. So I just encourage everybody with that as we close. Here's two questions, then we're going to be done. We always end on time. But number one, either one of you two, do you have any tips for changing an unhealthy team culture that's been in existence for a while? Great question, huh?
First thing is I would say is to look inside. Because in each individual on the team, including the leader, has to look at their own integrity and how they walk in wisdom and the fear of God. That's honestly as basic as I can get with the first step.
Yeah. People follow people, do that, right? So, Mike, yeah. Do you have anything?
You know, I heard something one time where they said people will not let go until you tell them where you want them to go. And I think a lot of times people don't have the vision, or they just want to keep doing things the same way they've done it. And obviously there's way more to this, but a good start, yes, look inside and then make sure that you're being very clear with the what and the why and the things that we're talking about today. Because a lot of times people are holding on to the way they're doing something because they don't really understand where you want to take them.
And then the leaders allow it. And that's one thing that's real important is a leader will allow a culture. What does your dad say, Pastor? I love that, what your dad says.
Yeah, my dad taught me a bad culture can exist for 6 hours, 6 days, 6 weeks. If it goes beyond that, somebody should have gotten fired, you know? And within 6 months, if within 6 weeks, if someone doesn't feel your leadership making a difference, you got to look in the mirror because people should love working with you after 6 weeks. And he might have said 6 months, something should happen, but I can't remember. But I remember it was 6666, and he's been in heaven for 40 years, so it's hard to remember everything. But he changed my life, that's for sure. I want to say one thing on that question about unhealthy team culture. A book that helped me, because I didn't plant the church, I took over a church. And unhealthy isn't necessarily a member. I like the question. They didn't say unhealthy people. They said an unhealthy team culture. And those aren't the same thing. So I had people who their zeal for God made them want to play positions that they shouldn't even be playing, you know? And so because I didn't plant the church and I took it over, I had to figure out how to handle that. And one book that really helped me was by Jack Welch. It was called From the Gut. And it was leadership that gave yourself permission to be intuitive. And in that, he talked about, you know, how the percentage of people that you change out matters. You can't just come and change everything, but just slowly begin to get those four things we talked about, the right people with the right motivations, et cetera. Get that in place and your whole culture is going to get more healthy. Here's a second question for you guys. Do you have any resource recommendations that have really helped you to build highly effective teams?
John Maxwell's 5 Levels of Leader. Absolutely, hands down, was my favorite, one of my favorites. It really helped me change me as a leader and be more aware of that there are different levels of leader and you can operate in any of the four, but if you don't keep going up, you're gonna end up losing. So that was a big one for me.
Yeah, that's a classic. Everybody should watch those videos with their staff, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
Even the line that you can be in level four with one person, level one with another. I mean, so many things he's powerful in that. Mike, how about you?
A couple that come to mind for me, another probably classic, Daniel Goleman's Primal Leadership. I think that's a really good leadership book. Helps with kind of emotional intelligence and just knowing how to lead people, create great culture. Another one I like is strength-based leadership. It's based off the strength finders. I don't know if you've done the Gallup strength finders before. Helps you know your strengths, but strength-based leadership is cool because you might hear this and think, well, I don't know if I have the personality for it or the strengths for it. Well, this helps you see that all kinds of personalities, all kinds of strengths can be great leaders. It's just knowing how to do it within who we are and putting the right kind of people around us. So I like strength-based leadership for that reason.
Yeah, that's incredible. Well, we actually, as a staff, we've read so many books together, haven't we? And we've had so many great people so into our lives. And I think that's an important part of the rhythm that you develop is that you have books that are making you and your staff constantly better. And listen, it's no fun to pastor your church feeling like you're a genius with 1,000 helpers. Don't do that. It's no fun doing that. It's not even true. But when you get a bunch of people who are a genius in their own way, and you have the opportunity to work with geniuses every day, man, what a joy that is. And those geniuses are sitting in your congregation. Amy, you watched as I tried to do things that we failed miserably at. And then I'd laugh. We'd be in staff and we'd say, we didn't do that very good. But somebody would come up to me after service and say, hey, Pastor, I just want you to know. And they had a skill. And we found a new person. And I'm not talking about horrible, horrible, miserable, but I'm just talking about when you dream, people's gifts tend to find their place within great dreams, you know, and that's a fun process to watch. So I'm not shocked that we went for 50 some minutes and it seemed like 10 or 15 minutes to me with you guys.
I know,
so
right?
These are two of my favorite people in the whole wide world. So thank you for making time today. And pastors, thank you for making time for you and your staff. I know a lot of you watch it with your staff. Thank you for sharing it so other pastors can get help too. If you think it's going to help somebody, it's available for share or available on our website or on our YouTube channel. But hey, Jesus has a dream of there being great churches in every community of the world. We get to be a part of it. Thank you for loving pastors. Thank you for all that you do. I know Easter was fun, and I believe that this Sunday we're going to have a good time too. Even though we're going to wonder, we preach so good, why aren't all everybody? The people back, right? We sang so good. Yeah. It's the same reason Jesus had to go find his people after Easter, I guess. So anyway, love you guys. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.